Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher, and tonight we are talking about race on the job.
For white Americans, it means acknowledging that the effects of slavery and Jim Crow didn't suddenly vanish in the 60s. That when minority groups voice discontent, they're not just engaging in reverse racism or practicing political correctness. When they wage peaceful protests, they're not demanding special treatment, but the equal treatment that our founders promised.
Race on the job, we're asking, should you be colorblind or color brave? That term coined by Ariel Investments President Melanie Hobson. Well, tonight, both of my guests are from Fannie Mae. Tawana Williams is Vice President and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, and John Forlines is Senior Vice President and Deputy Chief Risk Officer. We are talking about this issue. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, I want Tawana to finish your point about the conversations that you were having at Fannie Mae regarding race. You said the best way is to have a facilitator. How do you pick?
Well, you know, that's interesting because we had, I would say, almost 18 months of conversation of how is the best way to do it. And then I just decided as the D&I person, I've got to be brave. So I said, we're going to have a courageous conversation, and it's a test and learn. We didn't know who would show up. We had the problem of having to move to a larger room because so many people showed up. We used, and as John said, after we showed the video, which was about 7 minutes of Melody Hobson's Color Brave or Color Blind, there was complete silence. And I actually said, which are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it gave people time to be introspective. And people have to be ready, is what I said when around being facilitated. And you have to, I said ground rules. And part of the ground rules were, this is a safe place. Everything that you say would not be judged. We want you to be understanding, engaged, and authentic. Mm-hmm. And we did not start it until I got the agreement from the audience. And I think that's what happened.
And for those of you who may not be familiar with Melanie Hobson by profession, you may be familiar with her by marriage. She is married to George Lucas of Star Wars fame and is in an interracial marriage. And so certainly from her perspective, she has many points to speak to. John, what did you learn, as the representative of every white guy in America tonight? What did you learn, honestly, from these conversations? Because I can't imagine, just how unvarnished and candid some of the information coming out was.
I think what I learned is, particularly, again, Tawana said, the people, we just let people volunteer to show up. It's, at least among the people that showed up for the conversation, we're very like-minded as far as thinking this was an important issue. So we did actually, one of the things we talked about is, well, how do we draw other people in that might not just naturally be as interested in this topic?
Because you were probably speaking to the choir for the groups that were there.
Exactly. It felt like we were preaching to the choir. And so that was what was, I don't know that I thought of that going in, that just naturally that by people volunteering to come to an event like this, that the people that come to the event of many different backgrounds would kind of come to a general agreement about what their thoughts were about the topic.
Interesting. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Pam. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to mention a comment that was made in our group at our law firm when Trump was running for president. So the black female attorney asked the white male attorney if he would buy her freedom if Trump won.
Wow.
And it was funny. I mean, our group is open as far as talking about race because one of our other female attorneys went natural. Her hair is natural. And then the office administrator wanted to touch her hair. I mean, so we would talk about things like that. So it was kind of funny, but it was kind of sad at the same time.
But what came out of that? Because I think certainly the experience is interesting. I think it is, you know, telling, whether it be from a humorous perspective or there is a subtext. So what happened?
I mean, he was the white male attorney. I guess he was just, I don't even remember what his response was, but it was all in the context of all of the dysfunction with the justice system. And then Trump's associations with the types of people that he's, you know, that he deals with. So that's kind of what it was, and it was kind of historical, I suppose.
Okay, interesting. But, well, Pam, thank you so much. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. By the way, Pam, my producer wanted to get some information from you also, so stay with us. 202-319-7810. Let us talk to Missy. Missy, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Missy. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, working in construction, and I actually do work in a construction office, and I am the only black woman in an office full of white men. There are only two other women in the office with me. So, you know, I have that perspective of course, having to, you know, kind of understand what I'm talking about. I can't go in there, you know, with half-baked ideas or theories. I have to make sure that what I'm discussing is based on facts, is based on real news, not fake news. And, you know, and it helps with the conversation when you know what you're talking about. And it also helps to keep everybody calm, you know, cool and collected, because, you know, once you keep the emotion out of it and you're dealing with facts and you're dealing with what's being reported, or you're dealing with, you know, the true issues, then people are a little bit more willing to hear you if you're not emotional. So, I, you know, being here, I've definitely had that experience around these men. And I think, you know, I'm making an impact because I know a lot of them know they don't think like I think. So it just helps for them to have another perspective so that they understand, you know, that they're not the only ones who may be right in those situations.
Interesting. Missy, thank you so much. Tawana, you're nodding your head.
Well, you know, and I think that's so important. You have to be credible, I mean, and authentic. And, you know, to John's point, we didn't know who was going to show up. And while we felt like we may have been talking to the choir, it was an extremely diverse choir. From levels, we had officers, directors, we had associates. So I think people came for a lot of different reasons. One, to learn. One, it was the first initiative that had ever been done at Fannie Mae. So what's going to happen, you know, and then what's next? So it was a lot of reasons to be there, but I think everyone walked away more enlightened, a little more comfortable to talk to the person that maybe they hadn't spoken to, you know. And it was a charge that I left with them: continue to learn. This is a continuous process. And, you know, race is difficult, but it's not the most difficult thing that you will endure. And as a company like Fannie Mae, that we have so much diversity, we have to make sure we're leveraging that. And that's the inclusion piece that we're trying to get to. And you can't get to inclusion without talking about the obvious.
You know, your title, Tawana, as Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, that's pretty self-explanatory. But yours, John, Chief Deputy Chief Risk Officer, you know, short of, you know, seeing you as kind of a James Bond figure, which I would imagine that is not accurate, what does your title have to do with issues of diversity?
My title really has nothing to do with that, but I'm a member of the Diversity Advisory Council, okay, which is a member of 14 people within the company. And the Diversity Advisory Council is representatives from all over the company, many different levels within the company, many different divisions within the companies, just so we get broad perspectives on these topics.
What impact, you said it took 18 months.
Yes.
To move through this process. What impact do you believe, John, this has had on your business model? Because to want to mention that early, that, you know, all of the things that are our decisions obviously have to do with, you know, promoting and improving the business environment inside and outside. So how did that work?
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, the Diversity Advisory Council looks at topics of just the employee diversity, but we also look at issues of diversity with our vendors and suppliers. And there has been lots of discussions about how we can improve the diversity of the vendors and suppliers that we do business with. And this is something that our regulator has been very focused on. This is something that we're focused on. We're always looking for new ideas as to how we can do that. I would say that's probably the biggest impact on the business that this group talks about.
Right.
And I would even add to what John said. One of our values is we value our people and our communities. And we couch this into that because, you know, we provide housing for the community. And our people are of the community. So we can't value one without the other. And if we're going to, our mission is to be America's most valued housing partner. And we know America is extremely diverse. We know the change in demographics. So if we're not able to have a conversation that shows appreciation and inclusion with our own employees, how can we be culturally competent enough to become America's most valued housing partner?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about race in the workplace. Blair calling from Capitol Heights. Blair, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I work for a company that has 15 to 20,000 employees worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked to find out that they do not have a diversity office, a diversity person, a diversity committee, or any such thing. So I had an issue, and then I had no one to address it with. I mean, other than HR. And then you ask HR, and you feel like, well, you know, you don't know if they're lying to you or not.
Mm-hmm. What would you recommend to her to address this, particularly if you are in a large company? That is the company diverse or not so much, Blair?
Well, I don't know the breakdown. I can only guess, maybe 10% minorities, mm-hmm. but I'm guessing because there's no information anywhere within the company statement or the company thing that tells you that we have this many diverse populations working for the company. Now, it is an international company. We have offices in numerous countries and everything, but I have no idea. And then I don't go into an office ever. I'm based out of my home, and I work at home when I'm not on location somewhere.
Okay.
But I never go into the company office itself, maybe once every 2 years for some type of training.
Wow.
And then when you go, the training that I'm going for is just one particular segment of probably like less than 1% of what makes up the company.
Well, let me see if Tawana can address the issue, how to perhaps promote, you know, more inclusion, even if it's just in conversation, Tawana.
Blair, I have a question for you. Is most of the workforce a remote workforce?
No, only the workforce of most of the division that I work in. I would say in that division, as probably 60% of the workforce is home-based.
Mm-hmm.
But the company itself, no, we have actual physical offices all over the world where the largest percentage of employees work in an office.
Well, hold that point. I've got to take a break. We'll finish up your point on the other side. Blair, also Allison, stay with us, calling from Maryland. We want to hear about your awkward conversation. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Race in the workplace. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. We continue our discussion about race and the workplace. Before the break, we were talking to Blair about having a courageous conversation on race. So how would you recommend that she address this issue now that you know a little bit about her, Tawana?
Sure, Blair. I would, you know, go to your human resources office, but I would ask you to do some research as well. You know, people who have companies that have more diversity and leverage their diversity are more productive. They are, you know, there are statistics and research that shows that people are more diverse, that where there is more diversity, people are more productive. They tend to leave those companies at a lower rate. They contribute to the bottom line because they provide innovation. So there's an opportunity for you to provide that to the HR organization and really to understand why they don't have a diversity statement.
Okay. Well, Blair, thank you so much for go ahead. Did you have a comment real quick?
Well, yeah, she said, well, I can't really, like, go to HR. I can contact them via email. They're in a whole nother state. And
right, right.
But I did contact them. I asked them if they have a diversity officer, a diversity office or anything, and they said no. And then they wanted to know what my question was, and I told them I didn't feel I was being paid at the rate that other people with my same experience and position were being paid. And I just received the comment back that I'm being paid more than most of the other people at my level, which but there's no way to know.
Hmm. So your question was less so much, it was less about diversity and more about equity.
Well, it was more like, okay, I'm being paid less because I'm African American, not because I'm what I do, you know.
Yeah, I see.
That's, other races are being paid more for the same job.
Yeah, that's certainly a different issue as opposed to just specifically about, you know, diversity and certainly a much more complex issue, to say the least. But I appreciate your contributing to the conversation, and we're going to take another phone call. So good luck to you, Blair. Let's go to Allison. Allison calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Allison. What was this awkward conversation?
Oh, hello, sir. I was actually calling to respond to something one of your previous callers talked about.
Go right ahead. Go ahead.
Once you get into these conversations, you will find that people are far more open than we think they are. People actually want to have more of these conversations about race, but the fear is on both sides, mm-hmm. meaning from people who are of color as well as Caucasian people in the workplace. There's an element of fear, and once you can assure people that you can actually have this conversation in a very productive way and break down those barriers, you'll be surprised how open people really are to really learn more about each other. So this is coming from my experience where I actually do this for a living, and I have seen it happen over and over again.
Interesting point. And to that point, and this is, you know, as they say, this is a Black thing, where a lot of times, and I've heard this time and time again, we hear a lot about it on social media, and certainly, you know, Tawana, you are certainly welcome to, you know, to talk about this. When you're talking about issues of colorism and skin tone and the like, and multiracial people who identify as Black or African Americans, and people who may even seem, in some cases, racially ambiguous, a lot of times someone wants to know, you know, where are you from? You know, what is your racial background? But they usually end up asking the more direct question, what are you? And then hostility develops and, you know, and all of that. You know, how, if you were to see someone, John, and say it's a fair skinned person, but you don't know whether they are East Indian, you don't know whether they are Black, you don't know whether they are biracial, and, you know, how do you address that, or do you just leave them alone? If you're curious, or, you know, or an issue may come up and you may want to make sure that you don't step on any toes.
Well, I mean, a lot of it depends on how well you know the person. I mean, if it's someone that I don't know very well, I'm probably not likely to pursue that line of questioning. But I have often found people that I've worked with for some period of time where, you started out where is your family from?
And they say Chicago.
And particularly in the D.C. area, you ask someone and they'll be, well, I grew up in Northern Virginia, and they look Asian. And they've lived in, they were born and bred in Northern Virginia, you know, for example. So it's then just like, well, basically, where is your family of origin from? And I think when you ask those questions, most people are very open to that. And I think that they like to have those conversations, and they'll say, well, my parents came to the United States, or my grandparents came to the United States, whatever year it was. And they just have those conversations, you know, go on and on.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, and I say this, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, in the example that John used, you may see someone who appears to be Asian and you ask them where they're from and they say, well, you're from Chicago. Well, where are your parents from? South Carolina. Well, where are their parents from? Well, their parents are from California.
Exactly.
And you never really get to, you know, the question.
You know, and to your point, people love to talk about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you've turned that back on themselves. I think on the flip side of that, I was talking to a colleague, and someone, you know, they were saying that they were such and such. And the other person, no, you're not. And they're like, I am. I think I know I'm biracial. No, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's interesting because we decide what people are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very, and I think it's unconscious, but we decide if they're this or that. And we just had a very productive conversation about that because, you know, she said they were, it was, they said it with such confidence that she had to second think. Yeah, one parent's black, one parent's white. So I'm biracial. And they're like, no, you're black.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a very interesting conversation of how we decide what people are.
Allison, thank you so much for sharing with us. Is there anything as it relates to race that is off limits, or is it how you talk about it that may be off limits?
I think it's how you talk about it that is off limits. I think you find that most of the time, if you start these conversations, as one of the callers mentioned, that most people are very open to this and they want to learn more about what your thoughts are. They want to hear different perspectives. And I think that most people are very open. It's just a matter of someone having the guts to start the conversation.
What was the most difficult thing in this Courageous Conversation series of discussions that you heard, Tawana?
I think the person who actually stood up and just asked, would you prefer to be called black or African American?
Really?
I think that was probably, I mean, there was, because they were so courageous, and for a very conservative company to be able to just to have that authentic conversation, I think from an audience viewpoint, that was probably the most difficult thing for the audience, and to see how people reacted to
that.
How
did they react?
In a very respectful way. I mean, everyone just sort of looked at it, and then they said, well, let's talk about that. You know, and it was, you know, it came out in a conversation where people said, well, I would rather be called this or that. And it was just a very, very productive conversation. You know, but I think the positive is that the environment was so safe that she felt like she could stand up and say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been in another situation outside of Fannie Mae, and a gentleman, a white man, began the conversation with saying, and it was a panel talking about courageous conversations, and said, I had this colored. And before he finished saying colored, you know, someone, you know, basically cut him off completely and said, that's not what we use anymore, and really demeaned him, you know. And I think when you come to this conversation, you have to leave people whole, because you have to understand that they're coming from a place of learning and nothing else. So it was a very tense situation in a room of about 100 people. And he went on to say, well, I didn't know. I didn't know that colored was not a term I should use.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn from all of this, John?
I think I learned, as I mentioned earlier, that really when you come together, the people that are interested in the topic, they really do think very much alike. I think I learned, too, that I work with a lot of colleagues that really do have diverse opinions on the particular topic, because we did hear some very diverse opinions. I also learned that there were, I'm going to say half of the people in the room said absolutely nothing because they weren't, you know, they were just afraid to say anything. But what happened is some of those same people, after they left the room, felt very comfortable having more one-on-one conversations, and I'm not sure they would have even had those one-on-one conversations if they had not gone to the event to start with and really heard that it was a safe environment and that there were some productive ways to actually have that conversation.
Well, I think that's a good place to end this conversation, and I wanted to thank both of you, Tawana Williams and John Fourlines, with Fannie Mae for coming by. And I wanted to remind our listeners, the MLK Day Town Hall, MLK Day Race in the Media, will be held on Monday. And, of course, Fannie Mae and Home Free USA are our partners in this event. And certainly you will be able to check it out on Monday at Glen Arden Baptist Church. You can find out more information on our website, whur.com. I invite you to go to the website and find out more about it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Wednesday, January 11th. 2017. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, or Twitter at H Fisher, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com.